Coming up on this episode of the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt, we begin the year of Burton by taking a look back at Edward Scissorhands. Greetings and welcome to the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt, Creepy Kingdom's podcast, all about the creepiness of cinema. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this very episode, we begin our year of Burton by taking a look back at one of his classic films, Edward Scissorhands. In case you missed our previous announcements, throughout the entire year of 2019, every month, Creepy Kingdom will be focusing on a different Tim Burton film. You can see the entire schedule up at creepykingdom.com. So if you want to watch along with us. But before we get to that, I just want to mention that Monday, February 4th, 2019, we are going to be unveiling our next big project. You'll see it all over our social media. If you listen to the last CK News Flash, then you know what it is that we will be unveiling. If you missed it, well, go back and listen to it. It's awesome. But if you don't have a chance, don't worry. All will be revealed Monday, February 4th. 2019. Also coming very soon, we will be revealing our nominees for the creepiest film of 2018, in which you get to vote on. And we will be announcing the winners of said vote on the Friday before the Oscars. So stay tuned for that. But now it's time to open the crypt and take a look back at Edward Scissorhands. Hey there, and welcome to the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt. I am joined by Roxy Tart.
That was a long build up for not much intro.
Not much?
No.
Why? Because I didn't give you all your titles? Is that
right? Forgot all my titles? That's just mean. Hi, everyone. It's me, woman of many titles that James doesn't want to say.
No. But you hear those sparkly Back to the Future sounds. You know Roxy Tart's here.
Can you hear my phone?
Yeah. I mean, that's the noise from Back to the Future, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Oh, I have no idea. Okay, there. I turned my ringer off.
Oh, I'm going to find this noise somewhere online and send you a link to it. Because every time I hear it, it reminds me of Back to the Future.
What part of Back to the Future?
It's just part of the score when it literally sounds like that. You know, like when you first time you see the DeLorean, like... I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know about it. Maybe the listeners might want to back me up on this. I don't know. It is the movie crypt. It's appropriate. It's fine.
Yeah, it goes. Sure. It works.
All right. So this particular episode is the beginning of a year-long series we'll be doing called
The Year of Burton.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth.
I know.
Yeah, we're pretty stoked about it. Obviously, you've been following us on social media. You've been seeing that we've been doing it there, but on our social media, on the podcast, and we're going to be doing some written content as well. We're going to be celebrating all about Tim Burton. We're going to pick a film each month and, you know, post stuff online and write about it and talk about it on the podcast here.
And do all the things about it.
That's right. If you listen to the last CK News Flash, we went into way more in depth about what's coming this year, so we won't repeat ourselves.
No, if you want to know what's going on for the rest of the year and what movies like you can watch to kind of keep up, then please go listen to the CK News Flash, because everything is there.
It is. It's also creepykingdom.com on our main page. You can find the link to the list as well. So we're going to be starting off this year with the film Edward Scissorhands.
Maybe some of you have heard of it.
Maybe. You think so? Maybe. I think everyone's heard of it.
I think there might be a couple people listening who have heard of this movie.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I think everyone's heard of it. I'm not sure if everyone's seen it.
I don't know. It's weird for me to think that there are people that haven't seen Edward Scissorhands, or that haven't seen Edward Scissorhands like since they were a kid. But my husband is one of those people, and so like that's put kind of a whole new perspective on it for me.
Yeah, 1990, the film was released.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
so I was old enough to watch it. How about you?
Yes. I'm trying to say, what is this film even rated? I think it's just PG. I don't.
I think so, but it wasn't. It was not a kids' movie. Like,
no. It probably would get a PG-13 rating for a few scenes in the movie these days.
Yep.
But it was pretty well received when it came out. I remember it being a big hit. Everybody loved it. If you want to go back to that time in Tim Burton's career, we're coming off of two huge Tim Burton films. We're coming off of 1988's Beetlejuice.
Ooh.
And we're coming off of 1989's Batman, one of the biggest films of all time. So this was the next film he did after Batman. So
that is so weird, because when I think of Tim Burton, I think of a lot of things. You know, I think of Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands and Nightmare Before Christmas and Sweeney Todd. I do not think of Batman.
He did two Batman movies. We'll be talking about them later this year.
I know. It just kind of blows my mind. That is not what I think of when I think of Tim Burton.
Well, at this point, I think the general audiences were ready for whatever Tim Burton had to throw at him.
And he throws something he did.
He definitely did. So, all right. Well, you know, I revisited the film recently, and you, as did you.
Yep.
And I hadn't watched this movie in a very long time.
I'm not sure that I had seen this movie since 1990.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen it since 1990, but not since the 90s.
I feel like I've probably seen it since then, but not like sat down and watched it. You know, like it was on TV, so it was on in the background, like that kind of thing. But I don't think that I have actually sat down and watched it beginning to end since probably the early 90s.
I mean, it has to be the same for me as well, in all honesty. I mean, I've probably seen bits and pieces of it around then, but I haven't seen it since then. But I do have a very clear memory of going to see this movie in the theater. I remember going, it was just me and my mom, and we loved it, which was funny because some of the scenes that come up in this film, I was like, wow, this is awkward. But I was, I don't know, how old was I? Preteen. Let's just go there. I don't remember exactly.
Yep. Preteen. I love preteen.
Yep.
I believe they call those tweens now.
Tweens? Oh, okay. I like preteen better.
Yeah, they call them tweens.
And, you know, but right before we get into talking about it, I would say I really liked it a lot still. I could see why I liked it a lot as a child. I think a lot of this movie works on the premise of childlike wonder.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So I didn't really feel that way watching it again so many years later. I didn't have the childlike wonder.
I feel like I wouldn't necessarily categorize my style as pastel goth, but some other people would, because I like to mix gothic elements with either pastel colors or like bright neon colors and whatnot. And going back and watching this movie, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I feel as though maybe this movie influenced like my future styles just a little bit.
It's interesting you say that. It's because it's such a statement to have Edward Scissorhands in the middle of this pastel wonderland.
Yep.
You know, that had to leave an impression on everybody who watched. I can't think of any film that had that kind of presentation before, and not really since, in all honesty.
No, it is a very dark main character in a very bright, sterile, you know, happy world. Happy in quotes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a subtext there. So we're going to go through the film there. I'll start us off with the brief synopsis just for the few people that haven't seen it. But if you haven't seen these films as we go forward and you're going to listen to the podcast, I definitely suggest checking them out and not listening, not learning them through our words. I feel like most people listening have seen it, but they might not have seen it recently enough to remember the, you know, the details and
yep,
and all that kind of stuff. But as I said, the film is 1990, directed by Tim Burton, of course, and starring Johnny Depp. I believe those are the beginning of the Johnny Depp Tim Burton
relationship. This was the first movie that they did together.
As an artificial man named Edward, an unfinished creation who has scissor blades instead of hands. The young man is taken by a suburban family, falls in love with their teenage daughter. So that's the gist of what's going on here.
Pretty much, yeah. That covers it. And some people think he's made of cookies.
Who thinks they're made of cookies?
Hmm?
Who thinks they're made of cookies?
My husband.
Oh.
Thought Edward was made of cookies. And now I can't unthink it. So, my husband saw the movie when he was a little kid, and that was the only time he saw the movie, and it didn't make a lot of sense to him. And he somehow got in his head that Edward was made of cookies because of the scene with the, like, the gingerbread man and the cookie heart and whatnot. So now I can't quite get that out of my head of him being made of cookies.
So essentially the thought process here, if we're going on this theory, is that his outside is regular flesh that we're familiar with,
mm-hmm.
but his internal organs, guts, bones, blood is all cookies.
I'm really not sure. You'd have to ask my husband exactly how it works.
Okay.
You know, maybe just his heart is a cookie. I'm really not sure. I didn't press for more details.
Because he doesn't seem very... Well, let me take that back. He does look a little doughy.
He does look a little doughy. That is true. That skin tone. But yes, going back to what we were saying, this was Johnny Depp and Tim Burton's first movie together, which, as we all know, sparked a lifetime friendship and many movies.
It all begun here. So yeah, without any more hesitation, let's hop to it. Let's go through the journey of Edward Scissorhands.
So Tim Burton conceived Edward Scissorhands from his childhood upbringing in suburban Burbank, California, which is not too far from here.
Hop, skip, jump.
Yeah, and during pre-production of Beetlejuice, Carolyn Thompson was hired to adapt the story into a screenplay, and the film began development at 20th Century Fox because Warner Brothers actually declined it. I bet they are very sad that they did that.
Yeah.
It was fast-tracked after Tim Burton's financial success with Batman. Like you said, at that point, basically, he could make whatever he wanted.
Yep.
So the majority of the filming took place in Lutz, Florida, between March 10th and June 10th in 1990. And I just have a, like, I don't know, funny story about that. The movie isn't filmed on set. It's actually filmed in a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they went in and paid all of the people that lived there basically to go move into a hotel so that they could film. And they completely repainted all of the houses.
Really?
And redid all of the landscaping.
That's a real neighborhood. I never knew that. That's interesting.
That is a real neighborhood. If you watch the movie, there are two houses in the neighborhood that are tented for termites. Those houses are actually tented for termites. That was not part of the movie.
Really? But, how did you know this great trivia?
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. And then, so the whole town is real. But of course the hill and like Edward's home and whatnot are not real. That was a model, like a little model. So anytime you see it, it's just a model, like superimposed.
That's interesting, which I had some comments on that, which we'll get to when we get to the story a little bit here.
There's a scene where she looks in the beginning of the movie, she looks in her rearview mirror and sees it. And she's literally just looking at the model sitting behind the car.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, this film in Florida. Real neighborhood. It was the fourth collaboration between Tim Burton and Danny Elfman.
Another long-term romance.
I love those bromances.
Bromance. Even goths have bromances.
The leading role of Edward had been connected to several different actors prior to Johnny Depp's casting, but a meeting between Burton and Tom Cruise didn't quite work out. Burton didn't like Tom Cruise for the part. And then Tom Hanks and Gary Oldman both turned down the part.
Tom Hanks is an odd choice.
Can you even imagine?
I do want to watch that movie, though. I'll be honest. I think Gary Oldman could do anything. So that Gary Oldman is the closest to Johnny Depp. But
I think Gary Oldman could have totally done it. But and I think that Tom Cruise could have as well. It wouldn't have been the same, but I don't think he would have done a terrible job. But like Tom Hanks, that's just such like a different personality.
Yeah, it sure is.
So those didn't work out. So Johnny Depp, and then the inventor, of course, the role was written for Vincent Price. Vincent Price played the inventor, and it was his last major role in a movie.
Yeah, you could tell that was written for him. And Tim Burton has definitely had a love affair with Vincent Price, leading to some of his earlier work than when he was in school, his short films. Yeah, short film called Vincent.
Obvious watching his stuff that Vincent Price was a huge, like, you know, inspiration for him.
Yeah. So it must have been quite a. I mean, again, he's like, after Batman, he could do whatever he wanted. And so he's like, I'm going to write and put Vincent Price.
Right? I'm going to make a movie about a really pretty, like, pastel town, and I'm going to put Vincent Price in it, and it's going to be awesome.
Well, it's weird because, again, knowing that he grew up in Burbank, and the place actually looks a lot like Burbank. Burbank's not quite that extreme, but that neighborhood definitely feels like Burbank to me. So it's interesting that how much of this is autobiographical about how he felt growing up in that environment.
Right.
Which, another thing that's going to come up, I'm really excited to see what your opinion on. Is this film, for the most part, seems pretty retro, even from the time it was released. It looks like it was released in... I'm sorry, it looks like it was taking place in the 1950s. But there are several things that happen in the movie that strongly contradict that.
Yes. Yes, there are. We will totally talk about that.
Yeah. I'm kind of putting all these puzzle pieces together right now on the show, like... This might be the most autobiographical film that Tim Burton has ever made.
It actually might be. And like, I'd actually like to go back and watch it again with that in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, funny enough that you would say that. So the costume designer on the movie, she has said that a lot of Edward's like mannerisms and stuff were actually based off of Tim Burton, because he didn't talk much. They communicated in gestures a lot, like, which I thought was really, really funny, especially because Johnny Depp only says, like, I don't remember the number now. It's a very, very short amount of, small amount of words.
He only has a few lines, but it's interesting that, but every time he talks, it's so jarring, because you're like, you could talk? You've been spending so much time.
Right?
Not verbally communicating. But he speaks totally normal and calm, and as though he's been speaking with other people his whole life when he hasn't been. So this is a very interesting thing.
I just found this. This says, it goes right along with what we're talking about. This says, Burton acknowledged the main themes of Edward Scissorhands deal with self-discovery and isolation. Edward is found living alone in the attic of a gothic castle, a setting that is also used for main characters in Burton's Batman and Nightmare Before Christmas. Edward Scissorhands climaxes much like Frankenstein and Burton's own Frankenweenie. A mob confronts the evil creature, in this case Edward at his castle, etc., etc. But it says, Burton explained that his depiction of suburbia is not a bad place, it's a weird place. I tried to walk the line of making it funny and strange without being judgmental. It's a place where there's a lot of integrity.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was like suburbia and normalcy is bad. I think it's kind of celebrated to an extent.
Yeah. Kim leaves her jock boyfriend, Jim, to be with Edward, an event that many have postulated as Burton's revenge against jocks he encountered as a teenager in Burbank, California. Jim is then killed, a scene that shocked a number of observers who felt the whole tone of the film had been radically altered. Burton referred to this scene as a high school fantasy.
Wow. Well, we definitely jumped ahead in telling the story here, but
we did. But still, that very much goes with what we were talking about it being a bit autobiographical.
Wow. Yeah. That is a very interesting point there. I made a note about that as well. Well, let's get to the plot here, and kind of recall our thoughts as we tumble on the mountain.
You want to start? You want me to start?
I'll start. So an elderly woman tells her granddaughter the story of a young man named Edward who has scissor blades for hands. As the creation of an old inventor, Edward is artificially created human who is almost completed. The inventor homeschools Edward but suffers a heart attack and dies before he can attach hands to Edward. So the first thought I had, not too much to say about this, but I just thought about it, was that the movie starts off with Winona Ryder in old prosthetics.
Mm-hmm. Old lady prosthetics.
Which I thought were pretty impressive, actually. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, especially for the time.
Yeah. Like, it is an interesting choice to have the character be... And I guess this might come up in the end again, but how old do you think she was at that point? If she was a teenager in the time of Edward Scissorhands, like, this had to be so long. She looked like she was on her, like, deathbed.
She had been, like, her 80s or her 90s.
Yeah.
She's talking to her granddaughter. You know, like, so yeah, she was old. She was incredibly old. But I really like the beginning of the movie. I like how it's snowing and you see the snow falling on the town, you know, and the little girl's like, you know, tell me the story. Why is it snowing? You know what I mean? And I think that's really, really neat that's how it starts and that, you know, it's for her.
This whole story that we're listening is for granddaughters, what do you mean?
No. I mean,
the snow is for the grandmother. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the snow is for Winona Ryder's character, and I think that's really neat. And, like, when they come back around to it.
Well, The reason I bring this up is what is the year of all of these things happening? Because you watch the movie in 1990, you see that's old Winona Ryder, and then it's teenage Winona Ryder. But that's like about 35-year difference between where you think it's supposed to take place and the current time of 1990. And there's no way that that's – she's 30, you know, 55, 65, however, you know, in that point. So it really messes with what – time frame are we in?
Because you aren't in a time frame. There is no time frame. Edward Scissorhands does not take place in any particular time or era. It was meant to look timeless.
It doesn't look timeless, though. It looks very much like the 1950s.
It does. It totally does. But like you said, there's a lot of things in there that that aren't, you know, 50s. But and like a lot of the styling and the clothes is actually more 60s than 50s.
Yeah, I'd say am I late 50s for sure? Yeah.
You look at it and you're like, oh, that's definitely the 60s. You know, or that's definitely the late 50s. But that's when like suburbia was at its peak, so to speak. So
that's when it was created. It didn't exist before then. You know.
So that's when like. They went for it, I guess. But no, it was supposed to be timeless. I wish I could remember where I read that at.
I would say I kind of disagree with it. I disagree that it literally is timeless, but maybe that's what the message is supposed to be by throwing off the timelines, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, And to get very literal with all this, if she's like 80 years old or whatever, you know, how old is Edward?
Well,
you think he's still, he doesn't have like arthritis or anything?
No, because they show him at the end, right?
No.
They don't?
No, you don't see him at the end.
You don't?
Mm.
Oh, weird. I thought you did.
No, I don't recall that at all.
Huh. I thought you did. I thought Edward didn't age.
It's possible. Like,
I don't know. I just totally assumed that he was exactly the same, like that he never aged.
Well, you don't know. I don't think there's any proof of that, but that's sure believable because it seems to be that he was created to look the way he does throughout the movie. He wasn't created as a baby. You know, like we don't see that in the movie.
No, he's created just like that.
So, yeah. All right. Fine. He's ageless. He's an
ageless. I don't know. Yeah. Edward's ageless.
He's made of cookies. A cookies don't age. All right. All right. Continuing on.
All right. So, some years later, Peg Boggs, a local Avon door-to-door saleswoman, visits the decrepit Gothic mansion where Edward lives. She finds Edward alone and offers to take him to her home after discovering he's virtually harmless. Peg introduces Edward to her family, her husband Bill, their young son Kevin, and their teenage daughter Kim. The family come to see Edward as a kind person, though Kim is initially fearful of him. And of course, Kim is played by Winona Ryder.
This is the time I want to bring up the one thing about the mansion. So we have this neighborhood we've described, as we said, and at the end of the street is this decrepit, huge castle mansion.
Sitting on top of a huge hill.
And I decided to point this out, that the contrast reminded me of looking down Main Street in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, and then seeing a castle at the end of the street in turn of the century America. And I was like, I feel like that subconsciously inspired that visual.
I can totally see that.
You know, I could be wrong, but that was kind of like how I felt about it.
My whole thing was, no one's gone up there. That always bothers me. Like, in the beginning of the movie, she says to the granddaughter, you know, the castle on top of the hill. And the granddaughter says, yeah, it's haunted. You know? And okay, the granddaughter is like a little kid. I don't expect a little kid to go to the edge of the neighborhood and, like, walk up this giant hill to a castle. But it always bothered me that, like, in the movie, like, Peg looks in her rearview mirror and looks at it like she's never noticed it before. And is like, I'm gonna drive up there and see who's there. Like, I just...
That's kind of... But that's, I think that's intentional.
It's I know it's about a dude that Vincent Price built with scissor hands, but that is like the most unrealistic part of the movie to me.
You think so?
Is that all of these people in this town just ignored the giant castle on the hill looming over them, literally a completely different color than the entire neighborhood.
I think it's about how self-absorbed they are with their culture. To me, yeah, I didn't think that was weird at all. I totally bought that no one thought to go there, and she just decided to go there on her her never-ending quest to sell Avon. As you see before this, everyone else in her neighborhood is not interested.
Avon calling.
And buying her Avon. So this is kind of like a last... ditch attempt, like, well, I guess I better go to the old creepy mansion on the hill and see if they want to buy some Avon.
Right. I don't know. It just bothers me. That always bothered me about the movie. Maybe because I am one of those people who likes to, like, I would die in a horror movie. You know, I'm gonna go into the room with the lights off. Yeah. Like, so maybe that's it, because I would have seen that mansion like my whole life, and as soon as I was a teenager and able to like get up there, I would have, but
no. Yeah, one thing I made a note of, actually, which is probably I just made it at the beginning of the movie, but it's not about at any point in the movie, so why not bring it up now, is the parallels here for Edward Scissorhands to Freddy Krueger. First I was like, well, that's, you know, I mean, 1990, that's, you know, that's the height of Nightmare on Elm Street popularity time, right? I mean,
right.
And Johnny Depp was in the first Nightmare on Elm Street film. Mm-hmm. And you are using scissors right now, because that's coming in super loud on the recording. Way to stick with the theme.
I have all this stuff around me, and I'm like, I feel like I should be doing something that I don't have to think about while we record, but apparently scissors are too loud while recording Edward Scissorhands. Okay.
It was appropriate, though. It was appropriate. I like the effort.
I felt like we needed background noises.
Yeah, scissor noises. Yeah. Anyways, have you ever made that parallel connection between Nightmare on Elm Street and Edward Scissorhands before?
Only because of the knives for hands. Like, other than that, there's nothing else between the two. Like, Johnny Depp was in both movies, and Edward has knives for hands. But, yeah, you know, he's not a villain. He's a good guy. He's sympathetic.
Yeah, and apparently this character was created in Tim Burton's childhood. But I don't know. Just a thought I had. Okay. So we're going to move on.
No.
How do we pronounce the last name? The Boggses?
Their last name is Boggs, so it would be the Boggses.
The Boggses. The Boggses' neighbors are curious about their new house guest, and the Boggses throw a neighborhood barbecue welcoming Edward. Most of the neighbors are fascinated by Edward and befriend him, except the eccentric religious fanatic Esmeralda and Kim's boyfriend Jim. Edward repays the neighborhood for their kindness by trimming their hedges into topiaries. This leads him to discover that he can groom dog's hair, and later styles the hair of the neighborhood women. One of the women, Joyce, offers to help Edward open a hair salon. While scouting a location, Joyce attempts to seduce Edward but scares him away. Joyce tells the neighborhood women that he attempted to seduce her, reducing their trust in him. The bank refuses to give Edward a loan as he does not have a background or financial history. So...
I feel like that is just so much shoved into one little paragraph.
It is. It's jumped around there. So basically, but this is kind of a summary of the neighborhood people and how they interact with Edward. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting thing here. And one of the things that this brought up was the religious fanatic Esmeralda, who was always against Edward. And then once Joyce turned, made everyone turn on Edward, she kind of was like, I told you this was evil the whole time. And it was, what's interesting about her character is she clearly is not portrayed in a positive light, right? I mean,
no, not at all.
If there is the main villain of the film is boyfriend played by veteran actor Anthony Michael Hall. But she definitely is a villain. She's
a horrible person. I mean, really, they're all kind of horrible people.
Yes.
To some extent, which is...
Well, they don't have minds of their own, right? And so they're clearly have mob mentality.
Yep. Because
they're all about conformity.
Yep.
Conforming to the norm of their social circle. And no one really wants to be out of it.
And like with most, places in suburbia, like Desperate Housewives, is a great example. Everything looks good on the outside. Everyone seems to conform. But of course, they all have these like problems and secrets and blah, blah, blah. With Esmeralda, at least her secret is just like kind of out there, is that she's just a
jerk.
Thank you.
I mean, her role in the film doesn't really matter that much to the plot. So it's an interesting inclusion.
Mm-hmm. And again, it does make you think that there must have been some religious fanatic in Tim Burton's neighborhood who just didn't like him, because he was weird.
Probably. I mean, growing up during that time, sure. Nonconformity is the work of the devil.
Right?
So moving on a little bit, as far as the Toperies go, that they kind of stay throughout the film, and I love it. I love seeing all the different bushes cut as animals. I was like, I wish that's a place that I could visit. That's why I kind of wished it was filmed on a back lot or something, so that, I mean, not that they would keep it like that forever, but
it would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
I love when Peg first goes to the mansion, I love the like dichotomy between what it looks like on the outside, what it looks like on the inside, and what the yard looks like, because from the outside, it is very much a rundown, spooky gothic mansion. Mm-hmm. And on the inside, it is dirty and cobwebs and not a lot of furniture and a rundown, spooky gothic mansion. But the yard, when she walks into it, is beautiful and colorful and, topiaries and plants and flowers and whatnot.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
I really liked that.
So that was intentional. A little foreshadowing. So anyways, that was cool. I liked that when he started cutting the hair, because everyone just had crazy hairstyles and
I loved that.
And nobody really acknowledged it. It was just part of what was going on.
Yeah, because again, if everybody else had it, then it was fine.
Right.
That was the important thing, is to be like everyone else.
So yeah, wow, this is really an anti-conformity movie. I just keep seeing, we're digging deeper into the subtext of all this. Watching the master nonconformist at work. So then comes the scene where Joyce offers to get him a place, a hair salon for whatever reason.
This woman is just a slut. Like,
can say that, right? No. Sure, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, she certainly is appearing to be one.
The first time we meet her, she's hitting on the plumber who's fixing her dishwasher that wasn't really broken.
I think she's looking for love, okay? I don't know why.
No, she's married.
Oh, you're right. She is married, because we never see their husbands. I forgot about that, but she mentioned. I forgot.
Yeah, she looks right and goes, I hear that repairmen get lonely. Housewives get lonely, too. They just don't make commercials about it. You know what I mean? Like,
she said housewives. Yeah. And so this whole time, you think about all her actions. She's such her look, probably not inspired, but ironically very reminiscent of Peg Bundy.
Yes. That red hair. Like, the red hair and tight pants. How can you not think of Peg Bundy?
And yeah, she kind of owns that look. But the scene in question when Joyce takes Edward to a potential place where he could open a hair salon, and so they're alone, and Joyce pretty much throws herself onto him, and Edward freaks out and takes off. I mean, just how she was even acting, the sexuality of that scene. That's what I was talking about. I remember when I was watching that again, I was like, I was watching this with my mom. Like, I just felt like, even though you don't see anything, it's a little intense for a PG movie.
It's a really intense scene, and it's like, it's totally, you know, overtly sexual, and she is hitting on him and coming on to him and whatnot. But what makes it worse is when you, like, you remember that Edward's, like, mental age is not even a teenager. You know, he's a kid.
No, like,
and she
that.
Just, yeah, because he's a kid. He, like, you know, he was homeschooled for a couple of years. Like, he's a kid.
Yeah, it's true.
And so she just completely takes advantage of him. And when he gets scared, she doesn't want anyone to know. And so she lies about it and makes him look bad.
It's not even that she doesn't want anyone to know. She's hurt, but she was rejected. So she wants people to turn on him. You know, like, so it's not.
I mean, like, she doesn't want anyone to know that he rejected her.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So, and she says, I don't know if she says it or one of them, but, you know, they are talking about sexual assault. So, like,
yeah.
You know, like, it's not lighthearted at that point. You know, up and really to that point, the film's pretty lighthearted, except for when Anthony Michael Hall, the boyfriend, comes around and says his ridiculous lines, which is such contrast to the rest of the movie that makes it so funny.
I know.
But,
but no, they are straight talking about sexual assault. Like, the whole thing is just really unnerving and unsettling. And, you know, you want to talk about, like, bad guys, like villains. Obviously, it's Anthony Michael Hall's character and a little bit of Esmeralda. But I would say that Joyce is also totally a villain in this movie.
Yeah, it was all. I don't know if it's because of my memories or there's some feeling, but as the movie started, before she even did anything, I had a bad feeling about her. And yeah. I don't know if that's just the movie did that or my memories were that she did something not to be trusted. I remembered that. I didn't remember what it was, but I remember that she did. But there's something in how she is that, like, gives off that feeling.
It does. I mean, she's kind of what's the word I'm looking for? She's kind of a creeper. Like, if she was a dude, if you switched it out and she was a guy and Edward was a girl in the movie and she acted how she acted, if the plumber was a girl and she was a guy, you know, that would be, that would be completely unacceptable.
Yeah, like, you know, house husbands get lonely.
Yeah. You know, that would be totally, completely unacceptable. And, I mean, it still is coming from her, but I know it makes sense to me that you would see her and automatically kind of get this uneasy feeling, even if you didn't know why, because you saw the movie when you were a young boy.
Yeah.
And, like, that whole thing is just so not okay.
Yeah, I knew that she betrayed Edward. I didn't remember how, though. And thinking back to me watching as a child, I felt like I wasn't a child, tween, whatever, teenager, I don't know. I felt so sympathetic to Edward. And I didn't feel as sympathetic. I definitely felt sympathy watching it again, but I felt like I really felt sympathetic as a child. And I feel like maybe that was a little bit of me feeling like an outsider.
Yeah. And yeah. she does completely take advantage of him. Like not only in a sexual way, but also with the whole, you know, hair salon and blah, blah, blah. And he is really childlike, and it's one of those obvious examples of, you know, an adult taking advantage of a situation where the other person really can't do anything about it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, that is the catalyst to everyone in the neighborhood turning on Edward, but was that necessary for the plot to move forward? Was it necessary for that scene to happen? And did everyone need to turn? Because it didn't really matter if everyone turned or not. It was really about the conflict between him and Anthony Michael Hall.
Yep.
So it was almost unnecessary, but to the plot. But I think it was furthermore proving the mob conformity mentality.
Yes, very much so.
So yeah, it's just a little interesting, and like I said, a little more sexual than I thought as well. Before we move on, I guess this is the time I do want to talk about the time period stuff a little bit more. We discussed it, of course, but the indicators that I have that this is not taking place in the 1950s or 60s is that Anthony Michael Hall's character. What is his character's name? I keep saying his full name.
Jim.
Jim. That Jim discusses things that his father has at a dinner when he's over for dinner with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's literally talking about the latest technology of 1990.
Right.
He's like, oh, my dad got a new compact disc player. And then we got the new LaserDisc player. And I don't remember what else he said, but I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, not to mention just the whole thing in his home with the security system and...
Oh, yeah, the crazy...
And all of security. That. That was not a 1960s security system.
I think all the modern things were really related to him. Like, I can't think of anyone else that had anything that was modern to, you know, of that, not in the late 50s.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, like, even in the opening scene, you know, she's going door to door selling Avon, which is a very mid-century thing. But, like, we were talking about Joyce. When she gets to Joyce's house, Joyce has a completely modern built-in washing machine. Or, I mean, a dishwasher. Yeah.
Was it a modern one? I don't remember when dishwashers hit the scene. I thought they came in the 60s.
It was not a 1960s one.
Oh, the one she had wasn't time period correct. Mm-hmm. That didn't stick out to me though. I feel like because the colors were all pastel and it matched everything else. but if this might bring that up, might ruin my theory. But I feel like Jim not only represents like modern times trying to change Edward, like fighting the future or something, because everything about him is very futuristic. The way that he talked was very modern, like of the teenagers of the 90s. Like, he was using slang from the night. He literally, yes, as though he was transported in a time machine and put in that neighborhood. The more I think about it, everything about him is 90s.
It is. Although Peg's car, you know, her yellow car that she goes to, you know, she's driving around the neighborhood and she goes to pick him up. In the first car we see in the whole thing is a 70-something Plymouth Duster.
Oh, it's a 70s car. I never even thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
We're nitpicking now, but it looks old. but that might have been just like, you know, movie mistake kind of thing. But the stuff with Michael and Anthony Hall was not a mistake. It was super deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an interesting choice, and one that it went right over my head as a kid, I never even questioned this, but as I was watching this, you know, the other day, I was like, what year is this? What is going on?
Yeah, the cars in the driveways, when you see them, are 70s and 80s cars, painted pastel colors, like from the 1950s.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it was an accident at all.
No, I guess not. If all the cars were, yeah.
Yeah, all the cars are 70s, 80s models, but they're all painted those pastel colors.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What the heck does that mean? That just throws me for a complete loop. Yeah, I'm thinking about when the teenagers come back from the camping trip. That's definitely like a 70s van they were driving.
The van, yeah.
Did they even have vans in the 50s? I don't even.
I don't think so.
Yeah, vans came out in the 70s or maybe late 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all over the place. I'm trying to. I'm really trying to remember what article I read, like where it was that I saw that thing about the time frame it was in. But,
Well, maybe we'll find it, maybe we won't. But the article that you read was saying that it's not in a time frame. That's what you're saying. That it's...
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if we want to get really crazy here before we move on, maybe what this is all supposed to mean is that the subtlety of all these different things that don't make sense together would sound like someone's not so accurate memory of something that happened, since this film is a story being told.
Also the it's supposed to take place through Edward's eyes. It's like through you're supposed to be seeing the world as he sees it. So it's supposed to be from like his perspective.
Really? I never thought that at all. Really?
Yeah. It looks super surreal because you're supposed to be seeing it from Edward's perspective. And this is what he thinks that it all looks like, which is why everything is so like surreal and weird and whatnot.
I think I'm gonna go with, I like that memory idea that it's a bad memory, because when we recall things, we don't recall them exactly how they were.
No. Makes sense.
I was like, if some reason Tim Burton heard this, he'd be like, "Man, you guys need some hobbies." This doesn't mean any of this. I never even thought of it. I just thought it looked cool. Like, no, sorry, that's what we do here. We nerd out about all the details. All right, let's continue on.
All right. So bringing it back to Kim and Edward and Jim, Mr. Modern. Jealous of Kim's attraction to Edward, Jim suggests that Edward pick the lock on his parents' home to obtain a van for Jim and Kim. Edward agrees, but when he picks the lock, the burglar alarm is triggered. Jim flees and Edward is arrested. The police determine that his period of isolation has left Edward without any sense of reality or common sense. Edward takes responsibility for the robbery, telling a surprised Kim he did it because she asked him to. Edward is shunned by those in the neighborhood except for the Boggses.
Yeah, this is that one scene in the movie as a kid. You're like, how could you set up poor Edward?
Right?
But we do have... One thing we skimmed over here, actually, I didn't point out, which is this is the most ridiculous of all the scenes, is how they kept putting different clothes on Edward. And he doesn't take off his other clothes ever.
I don't think he can.
You took that as like that's part of his skin?
Yeah, I think the clothes, so to speak, are his, like that's his skin, I think. Okay. I don't think he was built to take his clothes off.
But, you know, they dress him in kind of, you know, the button-up shirt. That's kind of wacky. But this is like, he actually is, the more I think about those clothes, those are like modern 90s clothes. The big puffy jacket.
Yep.
The sports cap that looked pretty modern, right? I mean,
yep.
But it's funny to see him dressed in these other clothes, but see having his true self kind of be there and see that contrast. I think, again, that kind of throws into, like, you know,
conformity.
Yeah. And how ridiculous it is when you force someone to fit a mold that they don't fit into.
Well, yeah. One of the first things that Peg does when she gets him to the house is try to give him a makeover.
Yeah.
And color correct his skin.
Right.
It's too pale. He won't fit in.
Yeah, no, that theme keeps coming up over and over again. Yep. But yeah, that was a interesting scene. You know, he gets arrested, and sadness prevails. So where are we on the thing here?
So then Christmas time comes, and Edward carves an angelic ice sculpture modeled after Kim. The ice shavings are thrown into the air and fall like snow, a rarity for the neighborhood. Kim dances in the snowfall. Jim arrives and calls out Edward, surprising him and causing him to accidentally cut Kim's hand. Jim accuses Edward of intentionally harming Kim, but Kim, fed up with Jim's jealousy, breaks up with him. Edward then flees in a rage, destroying his works until he is calmed by a stray dog. Kim's parents head out to find Edward while Kim stays behind in case he returns. Edward does return to the Boggs' home and finds Kim there, who asks him to hold her, but Edward fears he will hurt her. Jim drives around a drunken rage, nearly runs over Kevin, but Edward pushes Kevin to safely, inadvertently cutting him. This causes those witnessing the event to think that Edward is attacking Kevin, and Jim tries attacking Edward. Edward defends himself, cutting Jim's arm, and then takes off to the mansion, because obviously all of this is too much for his poor little, like, whatever, 12-year-old brain.
Yeah.
Like, this poor kid, I know that he probably did not have the best life up in the mansion before, like, Peg came to get him and whatnot, but, like, it had to be better than this.
Well, that's all subjective, right? I mean, you know, because... what the best life is. I mean, all he knew was hanging out in the mansion, right? So I'm sure it was fine, right?
Right? He didn't know any better. Yeah. And then he comes down and he gets arrested, sexually assaulted, physically assaulted. Like, the town turns on it, you know? Like, poor kid.
Wow. Tim Burton had a very interesting childhood.
Right?
So, Kim races after Edward, while Jim obtains a handgun and follows Kim. In the mansion, Jim ambushes Edwards and fights with them. Edward refuses to fight back until he sees Jim slap Kim as she attempts to intervene. I don't even remember that. Wow. Edwards stabs Jim in the stomach and pushes him from a window of the mansion, killing him. Kim confesses her love to Edward and kisses him before departing. As the police and neighbors gather, Kim leads them to believe that Jim and Edward killed each other. So I have some thoughts on this scene.
First of all, she has some serious pull with the police department.
Yeah, they don't even investigate. They're just like, okay.
Okay, look, I know that my very recently ex-boyfriend is laying dead right here, but I'm telling you, don't bother to go in that house because they killed each other and there's nobody in there. Let's go home. Everybody go home.
Yeah, that's it. Everyone's like, okay. And like, yeah, one of the neighbors says, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So,
and everybody just goes home.
So that's weird. I don't know what the subtext of that is, but that's just weird. But this death drastically changes the tone of the movie. And how they deal with the death. They're so whatever about it.
Yeah.
Like, you could say, oh, he got a gun, so he had it coming. Which, that was that was a weird step that he had to get a gun.
Yeah. If you look at it from, like, he's a bully point of view, then he definitely had, he had it coming. You know what I mean? And he did go there to kill Edward. You know, he had a gun. I assume that if someone walks into my house with a gun, they're there to kill me. So right. I'm going to defend myself. And right. Edward didn't even do that until, you know, he hurt Kim. So, like, no love lost for Jim or anything. But yeah, the whole thing is just, you know, they come, they see the dead body, the cops come. She's like, they killed each other. And it's, eh, all right, let's go home.
The cop.
Bye.
You're like, well, we're not even going to file a report on this.
Someone will pick up this body eventually, right? Yeah, cool. And okay, let's go.
I have to think that that reaction again had to be intentional. It has to mean something.
Yo, for sure. For sure.
You know, like, not like, holy crap, this kid is dead. That lives in our neighborhood or comes around. There's a corpse right here. He's totally dead. And it's funny that you said you read this is a high school fantasy. Like, that's pretty dark too, right? Because it's like, right? what is this story telling us? That Edward murders him, but murder's not the word. He defends himself, but no, I mean, essentially at that point, what we're saying here is that Jim attacked Kim.
Mm-hmm.
And then Edward responded by stabbing him, right? That's the sequence of events. So
it's called chivalry, James. Yeah. Come on.
No, it's not called chivalry.
Because, I'm pretty sure it's called manslaughter.
Right, because he, at that, I'm just saying the sequence of events here. Like, he hit Kim. It was a strike. It hit. He wasn't laying down endless punches on her.
No.
So Edward was responding from emotion to seeing the woman he loves being physically struck.
Yes.
So it wasn't self-defense. If we're going to take this to a court of law, the trial of the people versus Edward Scissorhands. It wasn't self-defense at that moment when he killed him.
If I was Edward's lawyer,
yes,
I would argue that it was in fact self-defense because he wasn't defending himself until Jim hurt Kim, at which point he realized that both of them were in real danger.
Yeah, it could be argued. It also be argued that at any moment, Jim could have done anything because he came there with a gun.
Yeah.
And that was, he struck when the iron was hot. But we know as the viewers that Edward was acting out of emotion when he killed him.
Again, when you consider the fact that mentally he's basically a child, you know.
What does that mean? I mean, that's the way a child would act, right? They act on emotion. Yeah.
Fueled off emotion completely. There's no reason.
Right.
You know, a child gets upset and lashes out because they don't have the capacity to, you know, to rationalize it or reason or stuff like that. So, you know, if we go with he's in love with Kim, okay, well, whether he's in love with her or he loves her, you know, whether there's a difference, whether they know the difference, whatever, because really they're both kids because Kim's a teenager.
Sure.
You know, it's very, very much a purely emotional, completely gut reaction. Like, it's I don't know. Everything about Edward reminds me of a kid. And like,
I mean, you're kind of changing my perspective. I never really thought about that. Never. Like the first time I watched it or now that he is a kid. That kind of changes perspective on things. But leads me to my other thing I do want to bring up is that this love that they proclaim for each other, I did not really see that, like, develop on screen.
No.
Like, it didn't really happen.
I believe that he loves that family.
Yes, I can see that. That developed.
I 100% believe that he loves that family. And I very much believe that he loves Kim, like, that he loves her. Okay, not necessarily in love with her, but that he loves her. I think that because of the time period when it was made, and because they're supposed to be teenagers and blah blah blah, that you know, that sexual aspect was always thrown into it. You know, it's a romance. Like, everybody wants to, you know, wants it to be a romance, but I don't think that was really necessary for the story. You know, it very much could have been a brother-sister type of love, and I think everything still would have worked.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting. I watched the trailers that they had on the Blu-ray, and one of them completely makes it look like the movie is a love story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, think about, like, basically every, you know, teenage, early 20s movie made in the 80s. You know, they were very romance-driven. There was always some kind of romance. Look at The Breakfast Club. You know, those two characters did not have to hook up or be dating at the end or whatnot. But that's what sold, so that's what you made.
I mean, that's how they're trying to sell it, which is weird because it doesn't. I don't feel it watching the movie. I don't feel them falling in love with each other.
Nope.
You know, and when she says "I love you" to him, I didn't buy it. You know, I'm like, where is this coming from?
Nope. But again, like it's kind of like with the whole Romeo and Juliet thing. You know, they did not love each other. They thought they did because they're children.
Right.
But, you know, you don't even know what love is, really. You're just experimenting with how you feel.
Right, you know? Of course, yeah.
We're told that that feeling is love. So, yeah, okay, cool. We're in love. Right on. Like, but.
Right, all right. But even all that aside, like the reality of kids not really being in love, I'm just saying there was really nothing that really showed romance forming between them besides the ice sculpting scene, which is cute, but it's not. I, you know, that's it. That's why you're breaking up with your boyfriend, because he made snow.
I don't know. I'd say she's breaking up with her boyfriend because he's an ass. because he's a jerk, and like she realizes that there's something better out there. Like,
maybe I'm just saying that was a little forced, and it might have even be a thing that was literally forced in there.
Yeah, it was, though. It did feel like really forced. It didn't feel like it was part of the story. Like,
yeah, and you're right. Everything had to be like, oh, and they live happily ever after. Which leads me to the end of the film, the final scene. The elderly woman finishes telling her granddaughter the story, revealing that she is Kim and saying that she never saw Edward again. She prefers not to visit him because the decades have passed and she wants to remember her as she was in her youth. She thinks Edward is still alive, immortal, because he is artificial, and because the snow which Edward creates when carving ice sculptures. So the problem I have with this is she is clearly, as we said, 80 or 90 years old. And yeah, she was like, what, 15 at the time of the story being told?
Right around there, yeah.
So at no point in your long, illustrious life did you think, I should probably go check up on Edward if I'm so enamored that he makes it snow for me every year.
Yeah, that it's such bull. It is such bull, okay? If you really were a 15-year-old girl or 16-year-old girl and you were in love, you know, blah, 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 man, you'd be sneaking up the next night to go up there. All right, like, you just would. You'd sneak out every night, anytime you could. You'd be up there having long conversations and blah, 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 blah. And like, nah, no. I mean, I'm not buying.
I mean, yeah, the teenage thing for sure. But I just mean throughout your entire life.
Right.
Like, you're so enamored by this that you want to tell your granddaughter this story. Meanwhile, clearly you've married someone else.
Had children.
They had children. Like,
yes. And you have lived there the whole time staring at this mansion thinking, oh, the man I love lives up there. Bull. Don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, it makes this whole everything about it makes the beginning and end seemed like it was just forced into the story, like it wasn't originally part of the story.
Yep.
Which I feel like it might seem like we're being kind of negative about all this stuff, but I just kind of like digging deep into it because I feel like the subtext is very rich, and overall, you know, you turn your brain off and accept extend your suspension of disbelief. The film
turn
is
your
very,
brain off, and it's a great movie.
The film was very enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I like the snow part and the story part. You know, I think it's really cool that she's, you know, Kim is an old lady and he makes it snow every year for her. And like, just from a, like from a romantic point of view, it's like, oh, you know, that's so sweet. But the fact that she never went back up there just really always bothered me.
Yeah. And then to be like, and then their granddaughter states the obvious. Why don't you roll up there now?
Right.
Well, I want him to remember me as I was.
Well, then you should have gone up there when you were 18.
Yeah, I'm like 20, 30,
right?
40.
80 is not the time to be like, huh, I could go up there. Like,
but at the same time, she could still go up there. I mean, if he's so enamored to make it snow for her, what does he care?
Right?
Like, is Edward, like, super superficial all of a sudden? Like,
I'd want to die up there. You know? Like, that, if it really was a love story, you know, A, I'd have just been with Edward. But if I did need to conform to society, you know, and whatnot, like we're discussing, then I'd have at least snuck up there to see him. You know, especially, like, before I was married and had kids and blah, 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 blah. But I think it should have ended where she goes up there and he's making it snow and he sees her and he takes her in his arms and she dies.
And that would have been quite an epic ending.
I know, right?
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention before we end this podcast that about a month ago, I went to see a musical version of Edward Scissorhands.
Yes, you did.
Called Scissorhands. And you might say, well, if you just saw the play, shouldn't, when you watch the movie, all this stuff be fresh in your head? You know, it was an adaptation of the film, and it wasn't exact. Well, what was really awesome about the play, the people that put it on, I just saw another play from them last week, which is a Stranger Things parody, is that they take like known songs and work them into the script in the story. So it's not like they wrote original songs about what was going on. They would take songs that you know and start performing them around the story. And it was really interesting. And it was so well done and very immersive. I don't remember the name of the people that put it on, unfortunately. But, you know, it was in Hollywood, so you can look it up if you're interested. I think it's almost over, though, the run. But I bring all this up to say when I saw it, there was a certain cast member from Edward Scissorhands in attendance, which was Anthony Michael Hall was actually there in the same...
Neat.
Thing we were there. And for me, one of my all-time favorite films that I've seen, the one film I've seen more than any other film ever, I've probably seen it over 200 times because I watched it every day for many years when I was a youth, is the film Weird Science. I wish we could do a podcast on Weird Science somehow.
That does not surprise me at all.
What, the Weird Science is... Why does it surprise you?
It does not surprise me.
I said, why does it not surprise you?
At all, because it's very in your wheelhouse.
Weird Science raised me.
That's why it's not surprising.
The lessons of Weird Science have made me the man that I am. There was valuable lessons in that film.
Yes.
And that's a different podcast. But anyways, I was lucky enough to run into him in the hallway with me and Shannon in the hallway. And Shannon asked if we could take a picture. And he was so nice and so awesome.
That's rad.
And he took a picture with us. And that was awesome. I was going to bring up Weird Science, but I didn't. I was just like, I 100% should have.
You totally should
but
have.
But I just, you know, I didn't even want to stop him. I'm not that kind of guy.
But, I know you're not.
But Shannon did. So then we got the photo. So that was, he was waiting for his wife to come out of the bathroom. It wasn't, you know, and he certainly didn't want to start a, let's have a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Like bother him. kind of thing. But and he expressed how much he enjoyed the play and how the modern songs work to us, and he had a good time. So that's so despite his horrible character in this film.
Well, it's okay. It's just a character.
He's a great man. And he continues acting in some great roles. He's in The Dark Knight. Did you know that?
No, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen The Dark Knight?
No, James, that is not a part of this podcast.
No, come on.
No.
Why don't you watch The Dark Knight? It's Batman
it's
related,
which goes, back,
which goes back
I
to
am
Tim
not
Burton.
A Batman fan.
Come on.
Batman is too dark. I'm not a Batman fan.
It's too dark?
I'm a Marvel girl.
Well, yeah, I know, but still, The Dark Knight.
Not interested.
It's incredible. Not interested? Get the hell out of here. Dark Knight.
You've never seen Titanic.
Yeah, because that's I'm interested in that. Dark Knight is literally, one of the greatest films of all time. It's beyond comic book genre. Heath Ledger is literally, I'm just flabbergasted by it. Every once in a while, you say these things to me about films you haven't watched. Heath Ledger, and that's so funny that I sent you a gif of Heath Ledger's Joker randomly the other day.
I know what it's from.
Yeah, I know you know what it's from. Sure. It's absolutely incredible.
One of these days, I will watch Dark Knight, and you will watch Titanic.
I don't know how much I care about you watching Dark Knight. Because I really don't want to watch Titanic. Anyways, that was Edward Scissorhands. and we have, you know, we'll be going through more of the films each year for the rest of our lives. the decade of Burton is coming.
You know what, though? I would pretty much bet that for each year for the rest of our lives, we will probably end up watching at least one Burton film.
I think so. I guess I'll say this since we're wrapping up talking about the whole situation. Tim Burton has gotten a reputation of recently of being redundant and people not liking his current films, and that it's the same thing all the time. Oh, here's Johnny Depp being weird and Helena Bonham Carter shows up and you know, and that people are really reminiscent of this era of his career. Like, why doesn't he do Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands and all that stuff again? And my opinion on it is that I actually have enjoyed his films, even the ones that have been put out as of recent.
Yeah.
Mrs. Pettigrew's, whatever her name is, Home for Peculiar
Home
Children.
Home for Peculiar Children.
I loved the movie. It was so awesome.
Also, the costumes were done by the same woman who did the costumes for Edward Scissorhands.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. And I think this is the second film he did, that one he also did for 20th Century Fox. Most of his films have either been with Disney or Warner Brothers. So that's interesting that all came back around again. But yeah, I thought the film was great. And actually, there's some things that kind of remind me of Edward Scissorhands throughout that movie. And that was his last movie until, of course, Dumbo. I don't think there's been another one since between those. Dark Shadows. I thought that film was a lot of fun.
I loved it.
Well, clearly you and I are on the same page with this, but most people aren't. They don't. They have negative feelings about his recent films.
Whatever. They can take their negative feelings and do whatever they want with them.
and Helena Bonham Carter could do anything, anytime, ever, and I'm down for it.
And watch it and be happy with it.
I'm down for that. I love that they're, I don't think they're ever married, but they broke up. Mm-hmm. And to continue raising their children, they bought two houses right next door to each other.
I think that's amazing. I love that.
They're like, well, we're going to be separated by a wall that's a feet away or a few feet
away.
Well,
I mean, it makes sense to me. You know, my ex-husband and I have basically lived close together since we split up.
But you didn't live right next door to each other.
No, but if we could, we might.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd make things so easy.
Well, I guess I guess I can understand why you would say that. Co-parenting.
All right, but I gotta go. My computer's at 8%. The plug is way over there.
Wow, what a dilemma you're in.
It's bedtime, and I'm just watching it go like down.
It's going downhill. Yeah. We're out. It's our next film that we'll be doing is The Corpse Bride for February's podcast. So revisit that one now.
That is a love story.
I believe so.
if you want to rewatch The Corpse Bride before the next podcast, and then we can all talk about it together.
All right. And if you want to send in thoughts on Edward Scissorhands or Corpse Bride, let us know. We'll share them on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
All righty. Until next month.
Bye.
All righty. Like we said, the next one coming up is Corpse Bride. So revisit that film and get ready for February's film. Now, I know this episode was technically released in February, so you get two Tim Burton podcasts in February. Lucky you. All right, and of course, I have to mention all the awesome stuff we have going on at the Creepy Kingdom Patreon. Of course, right now, currently, the only place on the internet to watch our documentary about Haunted Mansion fans, Foolish Mortals, is exclusively in our Patreon. We also have bonus material being released this month from the film, not available anywhere else or seen anywhere else ever before, right in our Patreon. And we will be launching our long-awaited Patreon-exclusive podcast live from the dungeon. Just go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. And of course, for everything Creepy Kingdom, links to all of our social media to see all of our articles, videos, and of course, podcast show notes. And of course, the special thing we're announcing on Monday, February 4th, just go to creepykingdom.com. And if you want to contact us here, the email address is creepykingdom@gmail.com. Okay, until next time, the crypt is closed.